Linux Night Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. Hours of insightful guests, info, and flexible banter. Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Shit, I'm deaf.
Just hit the off button.
We hear, man.
Was it that bad? Huh?
If I cranked out,
wow, it was loud.
If I cranked it out to everybody and blew people's eardrums out, I apologize. I'm streaming the show for the first time, so if I fuck it up, I apologize to everybody. If I blew out your eardrums, I'm sorry.
Everybody sends Pat hate mail this time.
Yeah, this week send me
not
hate
Link.
Mail.
Pat.
If the sound
you
quality
send the hate mail goes to Pat.
If the sound quality sucks, send the hate mail to me.
Anyway, episode 220, right?
220, another yeah. Exciting episode.
220, a whole lot of episodes.
Recording comes out because I'm not recording tonight. So
no, I've got a backup running too. So.
Okay.
Yep. Better than 219 and bested only by 221. I'm sure.
Happy pre-Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Turkey.
Happy Turkey Day to everybody.
For everybody in the United
whether
States.
Or not you're from, yeah, whether or not you're from the United States, you know, everybody can have a happy Thanksgiving.
Go out and kill a turkey and cook it and eat it and enjoy.
Yeah. It's a happy, you know, happy stay home and eat good food and take a nap day tomorrow.
I was looking before I came over here. We got the Cabela catalog in the mail,
yeah,
which is
that.
Like a hunting outfit. And in there, they had you know, everybody has those blow-up Santa Clauses and stuff in their yards now. They had a blow-up Santa or a blow-up snowman with a shotgun standing next to a shotgun. I was like, I got to go get this thing.
Now, here's the picture that I'm having, right? Here's Alan sitting in the bathroom, drooling over a blow-up blow-up snowman
it wasn't
in
that.
The bathroom.
It wasn't that.
Hey, baby.
It's an incorrect picture there.
Is that a shotgun in your hand, or are you just happy to see me?
Well, one thing I got to explain about Pennsylvania is coming from New York, which is a pretty liberal state. I moved to Pennsylvania, you know, several years back. In Pennsylvania, it is a gun state. Even the liberals have guns. Everybody's got guns. So put it to this way. On opening day, half the people take their kids out of school, and they go out there in the field with their kids.
I was going to say, opening day is when you take your kid to hunt and go hunting.
The best is, like, opening day, you drive into a spot, and there's, like, alongside the road, there's people sitting in, like, lawn chairs with rifles. Now, technically, you're not supposed to be doing that. That's illegal. Oh, somebody's there.
Hello.
Who's that, Dan?
Hello? Yeah, this is Dan.
Wow, Dan, you're coming really, really loud and distorted. Can you bring your mic input down a little bit?
How's that?
That's much better.
You there?
Yeah, we're here.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
If you can hear me, I can't hear you. Let me see if I've got a problem with my headphones.
Well, we'll just keep talking until you can hear us. So, yeah, so that's Pennsylvania in a nutshell, you know.
You there? Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Can you hear us?
Let me try again.
Not good. He heard me to tell him. He heard enough where I said, turn down your mic gain.
Yeah, we haven't really touched it here, so.
Yeah, I think it's on his side. So Dan is MIA, huh?
Yeah, he's out serenading Dave Yates.
That's true. He's leaving disturbing voicemails on Dave Yates's
little Debbie Gibson from underneath the window.
Is that what he was thinking?
I think so. Yeah.
Only Dan would know such things.
Something about I'm missing you or something, you know.
That's Dan. Dan has strange taste in music.
Dan has strange taste.
That's not entirely true. Like on Facebook, they have that little plug-in application where you can compare your movie taste to your friends. And Dan and his wife compare pretty close to like my movie preferences too. And you know who else also was like a perfect match for me? Ben Stockwell.
I've installed that, but I haven't actually done anything with that. Dan's at the lemon party.
Oh, Jesus. Now, Dan went down to, I think, his mother-in-law's, right? For Thanksgiving?
I'm not sure.
I think that's where he went. So where is that? South Carolina? North Carolina? I think South Carolina.
My wife has a weasel in her shirt.
Okay.
It's true.
Sounds kinky.
And it's not me. I'm all the way across the room.
So what do we have to talk about?
All the way across the room videotaping.
What do we have technology?
Yeah, right.
I could talk about my adventures in getting playing with Dynabolic.
Oh, did you play with Dynabolic this week?
Oh, my God.
Oh, just to get the show stuff going, right?
Hello. Oh, yeah. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me this time?
We hear you, Dan. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
That's a good thing. You're still a little hot. Can you turn your mic down a little bit?
Sure. Do you have that?
That's a little better.
Better or worse? I've got a mixing board here. I can go anyway.
Yeah, can you go down a little more? Let me just hear you a little more.
Sure. How's that?
That's better.
Hello?
Yeah, we can still hear you.
I'm going to try calling in on my cell phone. This thing keeps dropping off every time after about 45 seconds reliably. I'll be right back.
Comcast.
He must be on Rogers in Canada.
Yeah. He's got Comcast or something, just like me. That's why I have to call in on the hard line. Actually, it's not. You know what? That's the confusing part, right? Like, I call in on Gizmo, and you guys know it, right? I'll call in on Gizmo half an hour before the show or whatever, and for a half hour, 45 minutes, I've got a great connection. It sounds wonderful. And then all of a sudden, it just drops off the face of the earth, and I can't hold a connection to save my life. Now, the odd thing about that is the only phone service that I have here, right, is BroadVoice. And, I mean, granted, we have BroadVoice for the show, too. That's what we hook the Astros box up to for the show. But I'll come in on my BroadVoice phone, which is voice over IP, and dial into the show, and you know, it'll be perfect the entire show. So I'm not quite entirely sure, you know, what the hell is going on. Maybe they just recognize the traffic going to Gizmo and are throttling.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't log into SIP at all, and going in through Gizmo, I get about 45 seconds before I just drop off.
And then it drops right off on you. That's what it did to me, too, so.
Could be a Gizmo issue. Well, you sound okay on the phone. Do we sound okay to you, Dan?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Okay. Well, everybody, we got Dan Sawyer, who everybody knows from Linux Journal and other magazines, and some of his writings about lots of different topics in Linux, especially in the multimedia world, which is a topic that's very near and dear to myself. So, Dan, welcome to the show. It's nice talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
So your last article, I think, in Linux Journal was it the Blender article?
No, I've had one since then. Was building a multi-track hard disk recorder.
Oh, that's right.
Portable.
Portable. It's funny you talked about that because I'm recording over here in our door on my side. So.
Cool. Yeah, I've started recording all my podcasts in our door as well. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so I got four channels going in. I'm using a whatchamacallit, the 1010. What the heck's the brand? I forget.
M-Audio?
M-Audio, yeah, that's the one. Now, you were going portable through a laptop, right?
Right, through a laptop. I have an RME multi-phase 9624.
And that's a pretty nice card, right? How many tracks can you do at once?
Yeah, it'll take in 8 analog tracks, 8 tracks over light pipe, 2 MIDI tracks, and 4 SPDIF tracks simultaneously.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's not going to use all of it yet, but who knows, there may come a day.
Now, in the article, you were talking about recording what, a play or a musical, I think it was?
Player, one of the things I do usually every fall is I got a couple regular clients that that exhibit plays at the San Francisco Fringe Festival. So I go out there and I mic the stage and run the whole thing through my board and into my laptop and into my camera. So I've got redundant video and audio, so I don't have to capture again if anything doesn't go wrong. And then I edit it down, master it to DVDs, insert cutscenes, transitions, you know, make it look really nice. I usually shoot three nights and then edit them together to get kind of the best performance. And package the DVDs, and then the usually they're just cast gifts, but every once in a while one of the producers is enterprising and decides they want to sell them for a while.
Now, you're really into the video editing stuff too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I get into audio through the video world. So
I have to ask you, what do you use in your daily production?
When I'm doing video, I use it really depends on the project. If it's something small that requires a lot of fancy transitions, I usually use KDM Live. If it's something longer that doesn't require so much of the whiz-bang, I still use Cuisine because it's lighter and faster. It also has a lot fewer features. I've cut a feature film, three short films, and one feature-length play on it, and I'm very comfortable with it. And the workflow is insanely fast. But for more polished stuff, KDM Live is doing me really good, though. I'm about to install Open Movie Editor. They've just put in a nodes-based compositor, and I've got an article to write on it for the March issue.
I'm not familiar with that one. Open Movie Editor?
It's a TCL/TK-based multi-track editor. It's laid out a lot like KDM Live is, but it looks more primitive because it's TCL/TK instead of QT. But they're a bit further along in their feature set. And they've got interface support with Blender for 3D transitions. They've got a nodes-based compositor now. They've got a more sophisticated title generator. I hadn't used it much up to this point simply because for a long time it only supported PAL. And being in America, I do most of my work in NTSC, so it wasn't very useful to me. But they've recently fixed that, and they've thrown a nodes-based compositor in for good measure. So I'm about to install that next week and give it a good workout.
Back to KDM Live. KDM Live has really improved lately to the point where it's almost become usable on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's actually stable. It's rather remarkable. When I first started checking it out back in, I guess it was last April that I first started using it. It was nice to have a multi-track editor. It wasn't so nice that it crashed every 10 minutes. I had to be really fast on the save button. But I needed something that would run on my laptop, and I didn't want to go through the bother of installing Cuisine there. But since about the 0.5 release, it's suddenly become usable. A lot of the scaling problems I reported on in the article I wrote for the October issue of Linux Journal have been resolved. And they've got real, genuine high-def profiles and everything in it now.
So you're
still a bit slow. But
are you doing high definition at all?
Not very often. I don't have a high-def camera yet, but every once in a while I'll get a client who's shot in high def and throws it my way and says, "Please, please, please, no one else can edit this."
Now we have a mutual friend. We have a mutual friend in Dan Dennedy of Kino fame.
Yeah, Dan, a great guy. He lives right down the street from me.
Right, he moved out there from Ohio, right?
Yep, he did.
Yeah, how's Dan doing? We haven't talked to him in a while.
Last I talked to him was earlier this week, and he was evidently flat in bed with a flu and not doing too well. But on a more global scale, he's doing pretty good.
Well, send our regards to him. He's a good guy, Dan.
Will do.
So as far as high def, I was reading a little bit. I know that Dan Dennedy is involved with MLT, which is the framework
right.
That's used by KDM Live.
By KDM Live.
And that is starting to get HD support, right?
Yes, it has HD support as far as resolution goes. As far as the actual the way the headers are written and the DOPs are put together in the HPV streams, it's a bit more iffy. And KDN Live right now is using a pastiche of that with FFmpeg to support what's going on. But for as far as the simple resolution, MLT is doing very well for spooling the frames out and keeping them in sync.
Now the high def that it supports, that's over tape, right? You still have to press play on the camera, right?
Yeah. Well, any video camera in the world that you use records only to one of two mediums. It records to a tape, or you can plug it into a hard disk. The two are usually not mutually exclusive. So, what I do when I go out shooting, if I'm on a dolly or a tripod or a crane, I've got my laptop set up as a hard disk recorder, so I'll just run to tape and to hard disk at the same time. Doesn't work quite so well when you're on a Steadicam or walking around handheld, and at that point I just go to tape and then capture later.
Now, you do professional video work, so you know your stuff mm-hmm. pretty well. Obviously, I've played around with video stuff, here and there for the last few years, and it's come quite a ways, and it still's got a way to go.
Yeah.
What do you think it really needs improvement for, as far as Linux?
There's two or three big things that drive me nuts. One of them is that we always have to wait an extra couple of years, and that's because it's because most of the software on Linux is open source, and we've got to wait until someone who's got rights to a patent has an interest in giving us a peek in on what goes on and how to use it. Nonetheless, it's really irritating, and it's one of the reasons I still have to keep a couple Windows boxes around just in case.
Yeah. You hear of some professional videographers, they still keep Windows or they still do Mac.
Yeah. I've still got a Windows box sitting here on my desk. I've got it there for, mostly I use it for After Effects because, Linux compositing is finally coming along, but it's not quite fast and easy yet. For video editing, I've got very simple taste. I actually don't like monolithic programs like Final Cut Pro. They're very useful, but there's too much in one spot. I like a good segmented workflow, partly because it allows me to spool the job out between myself and my partner and anyone we're subcontracting with at the time. But beyond that, Linux's video editing workflow has got a weak point when it comes to codecs. You still have to use 32 codecs, and when you're on 64-bit hardware, like I am, that becomes more, a little bit of a problem. And the final really weak point is, actually there's two more. One of them is compositing. Blender's finally got a compositor that works really well, but it's not fast, and it's got a couple very major shortcomings. OpenMovie now has a compositor. I haven't used it yet, so I don't know how to comment on it. But so far, nothing I've seen has, for example, good rotospline support, which is absolutely essential. And that can really cramp your style. And the final thing is you still really do have to know how to pimp FFmpeg from the command line, or you're going to get stuck and your deadlines are going to get blown, because the scripts that get called, as good as they are from Kino or from KDN Live or from anywhere else, have a tendency not to work right all the time for reasons that are somewhere off in the realm of black magic, and you have to know how to cast the proper incantations or whatever the hell the equivalent is in tech land.
Now, in the RC, someone's asking, what is a compositor? A real basic question for video. You can just...
A compositor does for video what the GIMP does for photographs. Compositing is the process of marrying different images to make them look as if they come from the same place. One of the most obvious uses is green screen work. You film an actor in front of a green screen, you use the computer to key out the green, and you drop behind him either a digital background or a film plate that you've shot somewhere else.
And this seems to be the trend in a lot of movies nowadays. It seems
like it's
cheap and it's come a long way.
Mm-hmm. It used to be back in the days of Star Wars, it was very, very expensive to do that because what you had to do is you had to do the whole process chemically on film stock. But since about the mid-90s, it has suddenly become cheaper to shoot digitally and pay people to spend their time with their butts in front of a computer screen than it has been to go out to some locations. So it's been fun to watch the transition. And to come into the industry during the transition has also been really exciting.
Now, I have to ask what your opinion is on Cinelara.
Do you have any language or content restrictions for this podcast?
No, you can say anything you want.
Well,
we put the explicit tag up. So.
Yeah, we have an explicit tag, so you can curse all you want.
Cool.
We do.
Yeah, in an attempt to be diplomatic, I've got to say Cinelara is a giant steaming pile of shit.
That's very diplomatic.
But how do you really feel about it? That's what we want to know.
It drives me crazy because it's one of those programs that's almost great, and it's hampered by some really, really, really stupid design flaws. It's almost great because it's very powerful. It's got a lot of plugins. It's got a built-in compositor. The track setup is kind of moronic, but it's something that you could learn to work with, and it could do you really well for once you got the workflow down. But it's got problems with drop frame time sync. It doesn't compensate for sync drift. You've got no stability. The thing is a resource hog. It makes Adobe Premiere look like it's fast and light, and it doesn't do all the things Premiere does. It kind of crawls on my low end machine here, which is an AMD 64-3200. It crashes every 5 or 10 minutes. It doesn't write its projects to an XML format. So if you get something screwed up in Cinelara and you're in the middle of a job, you can't even go in and convert the XML to something else and keep going. And the hell of it is that it does all these absolute, oh, and it doesn't read but a few file formats, which is also deeply irritating. And the hell of it is it does all these terrible things at the same time when it has the best effects plugin package I've seen on Linux, you know, natively. And when it's got the coding and the horsepower underneath to handle uncompressed high-def QuickTime in real time and to interface with real-time video cards. And it's a really, really slipshod pastiche of the very, very excellent and the utterly moronic and stupid. So it's an unusable program and for all the wrong reasons.
I guess one of the things, Cinelara is guilty of having, you know, you fire it up for the first time, you actually got the thing to compile if you didn't find a binary package for your distro, and you got it running for the first time, and you look at that interface, and it's daunting. I mean, yeah, there are other programs out in the world, in the Linux world, multimedia especially, that are similar to that. For instance, you know, you look at Ardour.
Blender, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you fire those up, and you're like, holy crap, what the hell is this? Where do I start, you know? But at least Blender and Ardour, you know, they're very usable, and once you learn the interface, it's...
Yeah, you've got a workflow that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's rock solid.
Yeah, and Cinelara doesn't have a workflow that makes sense, and it's not rock solid. It's more or less like trying to build a house in a quicksand pool.
So, did you ever try Main Actor at all?
Yeah, I did. I actually, I'm not exactly an unbiased source on this. I actually did some work for Main Concept years and years ago, and we had a falling out, and I never wound up getting paid, and it was kind of ugly. But, so I may not be an unbiased source, but I was always disappointed with Main Actor simply because it never quite worked right. It was better than anything else that was around for a long time, but It only read AVI files. It had some of the basic same basic sync problems that Linux packages have had forever, but it had it on its Windows version as well. I think I cut two short films in Main Actor. One of them was on Windows, and one of them I tried to do it on Linux, and it kept crashing, so I moved to Windows. It was a good, for $100 it wasn't bad, but it was a very basic program, and what we've got now in just in KDN Live surpasses all but the title and generator of what we used to have in Main Actor, and it's more stable.
Yeah, again, KDN Live has really come along, and the last couple releases, it's been pretty good.
It's
getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried some of the other ones, like Jashaka or Padivi?
Yeah, Jashaka. Yeah. Oh, sorry. What was the other one?
Padivi.
Padivi doesn't actually work yet. It's good for generating video clips out of still images, but it doesn't actually support editing yet. Or at least it didn't when I looked at it back in July. There's another project. Charlie Yates is working on that now, and I'm really hoping that he can help things move along. It's got a great concept. It's aiming to be kind of a shake or nuke type finishing system. And a lot of the tools that are there are really well, but at the moment it doesn't work. None of the stuff works together. You can do a few things with moving images, but there's no clear way to interface that with the video editing system. There's no good manual, so you can't tell how everything's supposed to cross-connect, and a lot of the buttons in the interface aren't hooked up yet. So it's still very much a work in progress that keeps getting, they keep shooting themselves in the foot with too much PR and not enough releases. If it ever comes of age, it's going to be a hell of a project, but it's not there yet.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the GStreamer-based multimedia applications, they're chasing a moving target with GStreamer. GStreamer seems to be moving at a really rapid pace, and it's tough for the applications to keep up and implement, you know, their mm-hmm. application using GStreamer as their base, because, you know, it changes so much, you know, from month to month.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's when GStreamer came out, everyone was saying, you know, it was the messiah of Linux multimedia, but very little has been built on it that has that stayed viable for more than one or two releases at a time. So kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it seems that way. I don't know. If it seems that the applications that use FFmpeg, you know, they're mm-hmm. phenomenal. FFmpeg is really great. So many applications use it, and the ones that do are mm-hmm. fantastic. VLC, MIT-TV, there's a bunch of them.
And M-Player, Blender, even Zine is using it as its back-end codec pack now. So it's a great little piece of software.
It's fantastic. And you can use it quite extensively from the command line. If you take the time to actually learn, you know, from the command line, you could do a lot with it.
Or if you're lazy like me, you just print the help screen out and hang it next to your monitor.
That works too. Or you could just use an application that uses it on the back end.
Yeah. There's quite a few good ones of that. Is AVI DMUX using that on the back end now?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Is K Mencoder... that'll use FFmpeg and Mencoder on the back end. AVI DMUX is another one worth mentioning, though. If you're moving over from Windows and you're missing VLC, it's a hell of a little workhorse application.
Yeah, I mean, VLC is a phenomenally powerful application. So is MPlayer, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people use VLC just for playing multimedia files, but mm-hmm. you can actually do streaming with it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean VLC. I meant Virtual Dub. But yeah, VLC is great on its own too.
Right. Do you use Avid DMUX too as well?
Yeah, I do. I was. It's really good for. Well, one of the things I use it for is for downscaling high def video. If I've got a high def source and I'm just going to standard def, it's a lot quicker doing the renders if I do the scale once on the source footage and then pipe it through my editor. And it does a phenomenal job scaling without losing too much.
been really happy with it.
Well, one of the things I used AVIDemux to do was strip out the audio from a DVD or video file. That works pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good for that, too. I actually usually do that from the command line with FFmpeg, which I'm sure isn't useful to a lot of users who prefer GUIs all the way down, but it's just so much faster.
Yeah. So you really seem to be into the multimedia stuff. Are there any areas, you know, regarding Linux that you're into besides video and audio?
Well, let's see. I mean, I do all my writing on Linux. That's Open Office. That's not terribly sexy. I'm not a very big sysadmin anymore. At least not if I can help it. So I don't run too many Apache servers if I can help it. But I do use Linux servers for all my websites and run WordPress and Joomla and some good open source CMSs like that on things.
Now you're involved in a bunch of different projects, right? Besides doing your own video work, what else do you do?
Let's see. I've got my multimedia company, which does the stage plays and the concert videos, and basically hires out for LA photography, and we hire out to anyone who wants to hire us out. I also am a regular on 3 podcasts, 2 of which I produce. One of them is the Polyschismatic Reprobates Hour at www.reprobateshour.com. And that's a skeptical cultural commentary show.
You mean sarcastic?
I'm also a podcast.
Sarcastic?
No, well, it's also sarcastic, but it's a skeptical as in critical thinking oriented. But we don't, it's not just like, you know, a let's debunk Bigfoot thing. We tackle more philosophy. We do a lot of stuff on art. We have artists on and talk about, whatever comes up. And historians, it's kind of academically bent with a bit of Monty Python-esque humor thrown in. I also host Sculpting God, where I podcast my fiction. I just posted the 3rd episode up to the feed tonight, actually, and that's at sculptgod.jbsawyer.net. And I maintain jbsawyer.net as my authorial homepage. I'm a regular on Apologia, which is a Christian atheist roundtable podcast where we talk philosophy, theology, epistemology, and ethics. And I, let's see. Now, those are the big ones. And I tend to jump in on anything else that I find interesting. So
it sounds like you're involved in quite a few things then.
Yeah. It keeps me nice and busy.
What about your fiction? What kind of writing do you do?
I write science fiction, fantasy, horror, and mysteries. The Sculpting God podcast is a collection of epiphany stories, kind of Ray Bradbury-esque in tone. Starting probably early February, I'm going to be podcasting my science fiction novel Predestination and Other Games of Chance, which is a science fiction political thriller. And after that, who knows? It depends on what I get done first as to what will come next.
Have you thought of maybe taking some of your fictional writings and maybe doing like an audio podcast where you do like different chapters from the book?
Oh yeah, that's what I'm doing right now with Sculpting God and what I'll be doing with Predestination.
So what's the background on the story? Can you give us a little teaser?
Predestination is a story centering around the revolution of the lunar government from the various Earth governments that own pieces of it. It particularly centers around a former U.S. national security advisor who has defected and switched sides and gets involved in a nice little series of intrigues and winds up working with the bounty hunters who had been hunting him when he defected.
How far in the future is it set?
It's set in 2168, and it runs for the first volume runs for 3 years, and then if that's successful, I'm going to put out Volume 2, which is, of course, Free Will and Other Compulsions, which tells the rest of the story of the war.
That sounds interesting. I'm really into science fiction. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are as well, so I'm definitely going to give that a listen.
Cool. And the Sculpting God podcast right now that I'm doing is short fiction. So if you liked Twilight Zone, if you liked Ray Bradbury, it's that kind of a feel. Some romance, some horror, some weird unexplained stuff, and some hard science fiction all mixed in together.
Sounds cool. Got it.
Yeah.
Definitely going to check it out. I've been starting to get into some of these audio casts of science fiction works that are out there, and some of them are pretty good. There's some decent ones out there. Do you listen to any?
Yeah, some of them are quite good. Yeah, I actually got into them by discovering Scott Sigler, and he's definitely above par for what's out there. He tends to write science fiction, techno thriller, horror pieces. I've had him on Reprobates Hour a few times. He's a lot of fun, and he's a very, very good suspense writer. I've been enjoying the Seventh Son series from J.C. Hutchins, and I also listened this year to T. Morris's Bill Above Battings and The Case of the Singing Sword, which just had me howling with laughter the whole way through. Those are the... and, of course, there's Dakota Ring Theater, which, if you haven't run into that, that's... they do hard-boiled detection, detective fiction, and a cross between... another show that's called The Red Panda, which is a kind of a cross between Batman and The Shadow done for laughs.
That could be pretty good.
It's really funny. And then if you like science fiction, probably the best one to check out is Escape Pod, which is hosted by Steve Ely. It's actually a podcast science fiction magazine. And they've had everybody from first-time writers to Hugo winners publish their stories there.
Pretty cool. There's a lot of really good stuff, really, really good science fiction out there if you dig hard enough. There are some gems out there if you look. And it seems with the whole podcasting thing, it's brought a lot of these people who would never have, become mainstream unless, it was for something like this. And some of those guys that you mentioned, have definitely grown in popularity because of podcasting and, the whole open multimedia new media framework. It's exciting stuff,
It really is. Yeah. What do you do? You say you play around with video a bit yourself. What do you generally use it for?
I'm doing just home videos and stuff for the family. I got two little kids, and we're constantly taking videos of them. And for the most part, I've used Kino initially, and I've used some of the DVD exporting utilities that Dan created for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also used some of the other DVD creation applications like DVD Styler, QDVD Author. Mainly those two. And for the most part, it works pretty well using those three. I've started messing around with some of the other video editors. I've tried Cinelara,
mm-hmm.
and I've also started using KDN Live. So I also played around a little bit with Lives, too.
I've tried Lives a few times, and I honestly can't figure the thing out to save my life. I mean, it builds fine, it works fine, I just can't figure out how to do anything with it.
The interface is really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I guess it was originally a VJ application, wasn't it? Something like that. For video jockeys at dance parties.
Right, just playing videos while, the music's cranking in the background.
Yeah.
I guess it's grown to something a little more, though.
Cool.
Yeah. So the other guys here, we've been doing this show for now about 4 years now, and we're having a lot of fun with it. And we enjoy it.
Oh, excellent. I actually ran across the show because you posted a derogatory comment about me on your blog. I hadn't heard about it.
You know what, though? The main let me go back. And basically what it was I was at work, and I was looking at some different websites. I'm familiar with your writings, Linux Journal, and I was looking through some websites. And I think it had more to do with the monitor that I have at work. It's a crappy monitor, and the contrast is really poor. Like when I came home, and my home monitor is a little better. I could see it a little better. But when I was at work, I was having a bad morning, and I kind of went off on a little bit of a rant.
You should do a backpedal on that one.
You know what, though?
I Oh, go ahead.
I have a problem with, like, websites that have dark backgrounds with dark lettering on top. There's no contrast, mm-hmm. and you can't see it. And, you know,
yeah.
I wear glasses, but, you know, I'm not vision impaired or anything. And honestly, I have a hard time reading, you know, sites like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that, too. Like, I work, I see people with criminal sessions running, and they'll have, like, a black background with blue lettering. And looking at that gives me a headache.
Oh, yeah, I know. That would drive me nuts. Yeah, it was a constructive derogatory comment, and I was able to fix the site theme, made it a lot more legible. But, yeah, it was, at that point I had just gotten the site up, and I was really happy for any press. Bad press or good press. I'm like, hey, it's a link. It goes here. I'm happy.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about WordPress. You could see who's linking to your postings.
Oh, I know. I've been loving it.
Yeah, WordPress is fantastic. That's what I use for my blog, and I know a lot of other people. It seems WordPress, I'd say about 75% of the bloggers use it that I know of.
Yeah, I use it on three of my five websites. God, I've got five websites now. Oh.
I mean, you could keep it simple, and it works really well if you just want to keep it simple. But if you want to really, really customize it, you can do that too if you want.
You really can, yeah. Are you guys podcasting your shows yet, or is it still just a live stream?
No, we podcast. What it is, you know, we do the live stream, and then a few hours later, we'll put the audio files up there with the XML feeds, and people can download them. The vast majority of people actually listen through them through the podcast, which is not surprising.
Excellent. Cool.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So, besides Linux Journal, what else have you written for?
So far, the only other one is Linux Plus Magazine, which is a Polish publication that they've recently started a U.S. edition. But Dan Demity hooked me up with them. I've written a couple articles for them.
Is that the Polish Linux website? I think I've seen it. Polish Linux?
No, it's different from Polish Linux. It's
or is that Polish Linux? I think.
They do Linux Plus DVD magazine, and they also do Hacker 9 magazine, I think it is. But they're new kids on the block. They only got about 10 or 15,000 circulation. But I'm hoping to branch out a bit in the next few months here and sell a couple articles to The Telegraph in the UK and maybe one to National Geographic or Via magazine. I got involved in some experimental archaeology groups last year, and I've gotten a lot of good research for some articles on that now.
When you say experimental archaeology, what do you mean exactly?
Regular archaeology is a historical science. It goes out, it digs things up, it tries to reconstruct what people used to do and how they used to do it. They form theories based on the evidence. Experimental archaeology is a relatively new science that is interested in testing those theories. The group I got involved with is the Northern California Experimental Firing Group, which is at ncefg.org. And what they do is it's headed by a couple archaeologists, from one from Nottingham and one from the University of Santa Cruz. And they have built a kiln, and every year they modify it and try different hypothetical designs. And there's a 2 or 3 day party where a bunch of people come, and we all stoke the kiln for 15-16 hours at a time and fire the pottery and measure the results that it has on different kinds of glazes to see if that design of kiln can do what the historical archaeologists have said they think it was used for. So it's a way to theory test an otherwise historical science.
So it's almost like a kind of reenactment.
Right, it's kind of a reenactment, but it's carefully controlled. Temperatures are measured. It's a lot of fun. And then the data from experimental archaeology feeds back into the data set for traditional archaeology, so the theories can be refined. Kind of in the same way that the genetic manipulation feeds back into the theory of evolution to refine the theory and make it closer to the truth.
Sounds like interesting stuff.
Yes.
Well, one of the things I'm following with archaeology is the discussion of where, when humans actually showed up in the Western Hemisphere.
That's not one I'm terribly familiar with.
It seems that it's a lot further in the past than people originally thought it was.
Really? Last I heard it was something like they were thinking 2500, 3500 BC. Is that... are they looking further back than that?
Might even be further back than that, actually. They're talking about, they're doing like DNA testing on different indigenous people from North America and South America. And, they see, you know, strands of DNA from, you know, Asia, Europe. Well, one hypothesis was that, you know, they talk about the Bering Strait land bridge, you know, where people crossed over from Asia. Well, one theory is that there was also a land bridge coming over from Europe and people actually walked across from Europe as well.
Wow, that would be interesting.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different things going on. It's really, really interesting stuff. At least to me, it is.
Cool. I'll have to look that up. Oh yeah, I'm a big history junkie. If you take a listen to Sculpting God, you'll notice all the deep history references all through it. I grew up. I'm the son of a historian and a theology professor. So. So I grew up with the stuff saturating my blood, and I just can't get away from it.
Yeah, so some people find that, you know, extremely boring. Like my wife, she hates anything with history. It's just an interest, you know. That's all it is.
You should show her HBO's Rome series.
Yeah, that's a good show. I like that.
It's amazing. And I've got a friend who hated history, and then I showed her Rome, and she's all of a sudden a major history nut.
My only problem with like these fictional representations of like, you know, the Roman Empire and everything, it seems like anytime they have actors talking, they all have British accents. Honestly, they wouldn't have British accents. They would have, you know, Latin accents.
Right, yeah.
You know, they didn't speak English. They spoke Latin.
Yep.
But, you know, all the theory people like, you know, the British accent.
Well, and the thing is, Americans are trained to revere the British accent with authority. It's just something that's part of our culture because Britain was the empire that ruled the world for so long. So when we hear British, we think, ah, great, powerful, magisterial, which summons up the right feelings to think about what Rome was.
I guess.
So.
I don't buy into that. I mean, you don't want the guy to have a Brooklyn accent, you know, but, you know, if he speaks with a regular, you know, generic accent, you know, that would suffice.
Slave.
What's that?
Yo, slave.
Yo. But you see my point, you know. What it is a lot of those theater people are, you know, British, though.
Yeah, that's, Britain is still the best place to go to get classically trained as an actor, so they still put out a lot of the people that have the right sense of taste and decorum to do the costume dramas.
Yeah, a lot of the British actors are on American television and they have full fake American accents. Some pull it off better than others.
Yeah. It's like Hugh Laurie on House. You'd never know listening to him on House that he's a Brit.
Yeah, there's a few that do it better. Like the guy who was on Rome, what's his name, McKidd? He's on that show Journeyman now, and he's okay. He sounds very, very generic sounding. You know, there are others like that. The girl from The Bionic Woman, she does a pretty good job. I think she's English.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
There's a few actors that actually pull it up better. Also, you have some Australian actors that pull off the American accent better than others. I mean, I guess...
Yeah, the guy that plays Apollo on Battlestar Galactica is a Brit, and I never would have known it without seeing some of the behind-the-scenes interviews.
Yeah, he's got a pretty brutal London accent.
Yeah.
And then you go the other way, you know, American actors or Canadian actors, you know, speaking with an English accent, you know. It's likewise. Some are better than others.
Some are better than others, yep.
So we're off topic here on technology, but that's okay. We have 2 hours to fill, so.
We are never off topic.
We could talk about anything we freaking feel like.
Excellent.
Well, we're probably going to go on some other topics. Dan, you're more than welcome to hang out and just chit-chat with us if you want to. If you want to jump off, that's fine, too.
Yeah, I can hang out for a little bit longer than I need to jet, but another 15, 20 minutes I can hang out.
Okay. Link, you still alive?
Yeah, I'm still here, man. I have my mute button on because everybody's like running back and forth in my house. So
the ferret's acting up again.
Thanksgiving Day kind of thing. But, yeah, I'm sitting right next to one of my fares, and he's, like, flipping out right now, too. So
you having company over?
Sitting next to Stinky. Yeah, I'm having me and my wife and kid. That's about as company as we're having tomorrow.
Sounds like a party.
Yep, grand plans include getting up late in the morning, eating heavily all day long, you know, interjected with periodical naps.
That works.
Not a bad plan for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think it's a great plan, you know.
You guys are both out in New York then, right?
Well, right now there's three of us. Two of us are in Pennsylvania. All three of us are in Pennsylvania. Two of us are in the Lehigh Valley. Link used to live over here. He lives outside of Philadelphia now. Dan, who is not on, Dan Washko, he used to live over here, too. We used to all do it from his house. And he lives down in Yorktown, Virginia now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the asterisk service is down in Virginia, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm out here in San Francisco.
So we're still in the Dan server tonight.
For the asterisk server.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the only thing. And the REC.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. This is actually the first time I'm streaming from my place here. Down in my basement that I finished.
Cool.
Yeah. So, Alan, how do you like the man cave?
The man cave.
I should put the TV on. It's quite nice. The guy did a nice job.
It works.
Yeah, I had the basement finished last February, and the guy did a very nice job. I got a very nice basement down here. And it's good, you know, especially in the wintertime, we can bring the kids down here and play.
Cool.
Yeah. San Francisco's a fun town. I've been out there a couple times. I enjoyed it. On my honeymoon, we were out in Hawaii, and we came back. We stopped off in San Francisco for a couple days.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I keep trying to move away, but because, you know, it's so the real estate is so bloody expensive here. But I keep coming back. There's something about it. Just like there's something about New York that gets people that are New York people. Something about San Francisco that really gets into your blood if you're here long enough.
You know what, though? Like, my brother lived in the Los Angeles area for about 7 years, and I've been to California.
Oh, God,
like,
yeah. I've
been there four times, you know, all throughout the state, and I absolutely hated L.A. San Diego I like, you know, because it's nice weather all the time. And, you know, it's a nice city and everything. It's right on the harbor and everything. It's real nice. L.A. is just like urban sprawl, but I like San Francisco. It reminded me a little bit of New York.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, San Francisco was originally colonized by people from New Jersey. That's that's why our accent is the way it is. It sounds kind of like a middle of the road New Jersey accent because it was originally colonized by people in the gold rush, businessmen coming over from New Jersey to do assays and that sort of thing.
So you're born and raised in San Francisco area?
Actually, no. I was born in San Diego, and then I was raised for quite a while in Dallas.
Okay.
Before moving to San Francisco when I was about 7 or 8.
So you've been out there a really long time then.
Yeah, I've been out here, 13 years now? On and off. No, more than that. I'm 30 now. 22 years. I moved to Portland for a while, but it didn't take. Had to move back. Tried moving to Atlanta. Didn't work. Had to move back.
Yeah, we're in Pennsylvania. Where we're at, it's a weird place. It's the Lehigh Valley. There's like three or four different, you know, different towns and cities. You got Allentown, Easton, Bethlehem, Nazareth, and they're all, you know, really close to each other. The whole area is maybe, I don't know, half a million people, that range.
Well, it's a lot of old steel towns, right?
Yeah, Bethlehem is a lot of the steel industry was located there, and you know that tanked in the 70s when the steel industry went belly up, and it's taken a long time for it to recover, and it's starting to show up. They're talking about more than likely they're going to turn it into like a museum of industrial science, and they're also going to have a casino and hotel resort. Sounds like they're going to do actually something decent with it.
Excellent.
But me personally, I'm originally from New York City. Alan's from Jersey. Link is from upstate New York. And Dan was the only original Lehigh Valley native. And he winds up, you know, moving down to Virginia, so go figure.
Got you all up there and then moved away.
Yep. So So, Link, how's everything? You still busy with the job?
Oh, yeah, man. All the time.
Are you doing anything interesting?
Let me see. Interesting. Always doing all kinds of, you know, there's always something going on. Working on, you know, trying to figure out some way to do some NFS clustering, using OSSEC. You guys ever heard of that?
No, what is that?
OSSEC is intrusion detection software. It's IDS. That's pretty interesting. Been doing that lately. I need to work on checking out Bastille Linux again, which apparently is way different from the last time I looked at it. So, you know, doing the whole Red Hat thing. Trying to get my feet on that stuff again, the RPMs and stuff that I love so much.
Red Hat is very corporate, man. Any of the big corporations that run Linux, a lot of them run Red Hat.
Yeah. Writing exec scripts to do all kinds of, you know, nifty crap. You know, the usual, like, systems administration stuff, so.
But you like it a lot better because you're doing Linux 100%.
Yeah, I'm doing Linux 100, well, you know, 99, 98% anyway, and
that other 2%
I like
is what,
it better
Linux?
Because, well, it's you know, there's some Windows things that I will do. I'll try and help out just because I'm part of a team up here and stuff. And we have some, you know, we have some other Unix-y things going on and some email appliances and things like that, you know, and I'll help out wherever I'm needed. But I like it a lot better up here because... you know, number one, my boss is really great, and number two, they pay me, which is, you know, both of those are in stark contrast to where I was working before, so.
Yeah, I used to work for a telemarketing firm.
Well, it's a direct marketing company, yeah. Big conglomerate direct marketing company.
Nightmare stuff. I used to work in college for a while. I worked telemarketing for Sprint, and let me tell you, I'm so glad it's done.
I did all their IT work, and the thing with that kind of company is everything is always a gigantic fire for you to put out. The second thing about that is they really employ bottom of the barrel people, it seems, in every aspect of the company.
Yep.
You know, like,
and everybody wants to be the big fish in the little pond, too.
Right, and especially the management, you know what I mean? The management's bottom-of-the-barrel management, and they're always trying to tell you that they don't have any money, even though they're raking it in hand over fist.
Right.
And, you know, it's just poor tactics and piss-poor management and, you know, stuff like that. And it's really tough. It's a tough kind of company to work for, companies that do that sort of thing. And, yep. You know, from when I got out here, I met a lot of other people who have worked, you know, technology jobs in that sector as well, like me. And we all have the same stories, you know what I mean? Like the slave driving management that doesn't want to pay you any money and has no idea what the hell, you know, couldn't find their ass with both hands on the cheek kind of thing. So, but yeah, so I really like it out here a lot better.
Cool.
It's nice to be, you know, working with some actual contemporaries and some really smart people.
I work with smart people, but unfortunately, not smart enough to use Linux mostly. There's a few. Most of the Unix guys I know that I deal with, they're into Linux. They check it out. They see what it's about.
But, you know, I think people are going to come around to it now. It's really gaining a lot of momentum lately.
Well, Vista's a turd, man. There's no ifs and buts about it. You can't polish a turd.
Yeah.
No one's
going
to.
Yeah, I got to get going.
No one's going to migrate to Vista. Very few people are, at least into the corporate environment. Well, Dan, thanks for talking to us. We really appreciate it. And you're more than welcome to come on again in the future.
Yeah, give me a call anytime you're talking about something I might be useful on.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks a lot.
Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, have a good one. You too. Bye.
Bye. And that was Dan Sawyer, Linux Journal fame, and other things. A lot of things.
Many other things.
Sounds like a very busy guy, man. So, I had a fun adventure this week playing with Dynabolic and Muse in particular. Now, Muse is what we use to stream to the Icecast server. And it's written by the guys who maintain the Dynabolic distro. Dynabolic is a live multimedia distribution. It has a bunch of, you know, really cool video and audio applications on there. Now, the last few versions, the most recent versions, I cannot get it to boot into a graphical environment on any of my machines. I don't know if you guys have played around with it, Dynabolic.
Not recently.
But the last few releases, I cannot get X to boot up at all. So what I wound up doing was using an old version, version 1.41, which is a couple years old. And that's based on 2.4 kernel. So I'm streaming a show through my workstation, you know, with Dynabolic in a live CD environment. And I had one little issue. My workstation has like an NVIDIA chipset, and the network card uses the Force Death driver. And that's supported in the newer kernels, 2.6 and 2.6, I think 2.6.10 onward. So it wasn't recognized in Dynabolic. So luckily I had a spare network card lying around, and what I wound up doing was slapping it in there, and that's what I got now. So I have two network cards, and it works. So I'm happy.
And so are our listeners.
I tried a bunch of other streaming clients that connect to Icecast servers. There was a couple other ones. There was Dark Ice, Isis 2, and I couldn't get any of them to work, man, no matter what I did. Now, what we're recording to is my box that has a door set up, you know, my multi-track. That's running Studio 64, which is a Debian derivative. And I noticed there was a Debian package for Muse on the Dynabolic website, so I downloaded that. And I said, let me see if I can stream from the Studio 64 box. You know, maybe I can do the recording and the streaming all from the same location. So I downloaded that, and I was actually able to stream with an OGG stream. Now, the guys who created the package did not include MP3 at all, which is kind of weird because Muse on Dynabolic has MP3 capability, no problem. So I tried compiling it myself, and I was getting an error, and I did a search on the error, and I found one reference on an Italian bulletin board. And I was able to, you know, decipher what they wrote, you know, I understand a little bit of Italian. And I tried to fix, but I just couldn't get the damn thing to compile. So that there is a bug in the latest version of Muse, which is a streaming client that's on Dynabolic. But the Dynabolic guys have it, you know, compiled, no problem. So if you want to use Muse, you either got to use one of the, you know, pre-built binaries, you know, if you don't care about MP3 streaming, or you go with Dynabolic. So I went with Dynabolic, which is what Dan uses, I believe. So now, Link, when that one time that we streamed from your place, I think it was like 2 summers ago.
Oh, there were 2 times from my place,
couple
actually.
Times, right?
Yeah.
You use Dynabolic too, right?
Oh, yeah.
It works pretty well, I mean.
That's the thing to use, man.
Yeah, so if anybody has, like, issues, it seems like the boxes that I tried it on, Dynabolic, it didn't like ATI video cards or NVIDIA video cards. So I don't know if it's a conscious thing that they, you know, they're hardcore free software people and they don't want anything to do with, you know, proprietary, you know, video cards that require their drivers to get them going. Or it's just, you know, coincidence, but I just could not get them to boot into a graphical environment on machines with either video cards. Now, the newer version of Dynabolic is running, I think it's XFCE, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the old version used Fluxbox, and it works fine, Fluxbox. So, go figure.
Haven't used them, so...
Do you guys run XFCE at all? I know Dan is kind of down on XFCE lately, the last couple of releases.
No, I'm kidding.
I used to run it, you know, a whole lot.
It was like, you know, GNOME Lite. And it still is to a certain degree.
GNOME Lite. Sounds like it should be a beer.
GNOME Lite, yeah. But it seems like they're throwing more and more stuff into it. They got like a new file manager and a whole... It seems to be a little more integrated than it used to be. And it's a little more heavier. It's not so light anymore. It seems the real... hardcore light window manager is still like Fluxbox.
It's because Fluxbox rocks, man.
Do you still use Fluxbox? Do you use KDE, don't you, Link?
Yeah, for the most part. But if I have to go light somewhere, I reach for the Fluxbox.
Yeah, it's real good on old hardware, man. It's really, really ultra customizable. You can go crazy tweaking the shit out of it. You know, so much to the point that you don't do anything else.
You need to have the sound of an opening beer where you just reach for the Fluxbox.
What was the window manager that you guys used on that Linux for Kids project?
IceWM.
IceWM. That looks very Windows, like Windows 95-ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got Fluxbox. OpenBox is absolutely nothing. Have you guys looked at OpenBox?
Nope.
It's nothing.
I've never heard of it, actually.
It's like a step above just going to a generic, XBoot, You can change rat poison.
Rat poison, yeah.
Trying to catch up with everybody in the IRC here. Apparently my freaking networking just dropped off on my laptop. It's the weirdest thing.
No luck down there anymore.
Comcast.
Well, I'm sitting about 17 inches away from my access point, and I think it just, smacked me out, and I had to reset everything to get going again, but it's really a pain in the butt.
Yeah, we talk about lightweight, window managers. I know Dan was hardcore lightweight for the longest time, but he seems to mostly be into GNOME now.
I just can't work with that. GNOME, yeah.
I have GNOME on here on the laptop, and it's pretty usable. Once you get rid of the stupid toolbar on the top, you can get rid of that and put those functionality into the toolbar and move it around.
Oh, I know you can. I just never got comfortable with it.
Yeah, but if you're going to do that and, ditch the extra toolbar and make the other one functional, why don't you just run KDE, dude?
True.
I
run KDE on my main workstation here. It's Kubuntu, and I like KDE. Some people rag on it because, it's too Windows-like. You know what, man? It works.
It's not Windows-like at all.
I can customize it. I like it. It's really good. And KDE 4 looks really exciting, some of the work those guys are doing.
If you look on my laptop, it certainly doesn't look like Windows. It looks more like XFCE, probably, than
You can
Windows,
customize
sure.
KDE quite a bit, man.
Yeah.
You can put transparencies. Oh, yeah. You can change the toolbar. Go crazy. And it's actually, you can actually find configuration utilities that are not overly simplified.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a little bit of digging to do. Have you guys seen the new file manager, Dolphin, in the latest version of Kubuntu?
Yeah, I'm not overly happy with that.
I'm not crazy about it either. I think it's okay for somebody who doesn't have a need for things.
If you have a lot of files and you try to do a rename on it, it's very slow.
Yeah, it's okay, but I don't think it's for me. I like Conqueror.
I haven't seen it, but you know what? There is no better file manager than RocksFiler.
You like RocksFiler. Conqueror is
all there.
Conqueror
is
phenomenal, man. I mean, I know some people use it as their primary internet browser. I don't do that. I use it mostly for file stuff and for remote stuff like SSH, FTP. It's fantastic. It really is great, man. You do fish, and you can do an SSH session, copy your files back and forth. It works fantastic, man. It's seamless.
Yeah, that works good, but you can also use the SSHFS,
True.
On a command line and do it even faster.
Oh, well, yeah, if you want to get really fast.
Or just SCP,
Yeah. I don't know. I'm lazy, man. I like dragging and dropping.
Yeah. I don't mind Conqueror. I think Conqueror has some good things about it.
Yeah. I tell you what, though.
I think it's much smoother to use than Nautilus is, I think.
But. Yeah, the thing that I don't like about Nautilus is the default setup where, anytime you click on a link, it opens up another window. But you could change that.
Yeah, I'm not. It's like I said, I just could never get used to GNOME. It was actually, I used it at work for a little while when we first got the Linux boxes in. And I would find that it was just, nightly lockup on me, or Nautilus would reset, and then I'd lose all my icons. And there was nothing short of turning off the machine and turning it back on that you could do to get the damn things back.
You know what's funny? If you look at the newer versions
sort
of like
everybody over to KDE.
Solaris, they're running GNOME as the desktop, and they call it Java Desktop. Mm-hmm. It's freaking GNOME, though.
Yeah, but it's all Java-based.
Yeah, it's GNOME.
Oh, I know that. I'm just saying.
It's mostly GNOME.
It's mostly gajunk. That's what it is.
It's better than what the other Solaris is of running.
Oh, come on, CDE.
Yeah, CDE, man. That's like so 1990.
Oh, Solaris with CDE. Yeah.
You know what's scary, Link?
See, now that was the thing. Everybody, when XFCE was, you know, when I was really getting into XFCE, I would show people and people would freak out because they're like, oh, no, it's CDE. And I say, you know, yeah, it's like CDE except it works, you know?
Yeah, CDE is bad.
And now even XFCE is getting bloated, so...
Hey, up until a couple months ago, we still had people in my room running CDE.
Dude, I walk around the floor, like some of the people that have
it just works.
That have Spark stations,
yeah.
They have freaking CDE as their desktop. I'm like shaking my head thinking,
well, because
what is the year? 1990? I mean, come on.
But unless they've been upgraded to the latest version of Sun on it, they don't get the ability to run KDE without a whole lot of crap in the background.
Right, but they did. They also had, like, what was it, like the Open Desktop or some crap like that that you could run since Solaris version 7 or something like that.
Man, which is
which
old,
was
yeah.
really, you know, and anybody that thinks CDE was stinky, man, you should have seen that other desktop. That was even worse. It was horrible.
Yeah, but it's scary. You see,
but
I
imagine, you know, GNOME for them is a real improvement.
Yeah, so. It's a huge improvement in CDE.
But again, it's one of those things that just runs most of the time, and it runs good enough that everybody just leaves it unless you upgrade your machine and get the new version.
I know. You get these hardcore programmer types who, like, all they have is a bunch of terminal sessions. I mean, not for nothing. When I run my Linux box, I always have, you know, 2-3 terminal sessions open for the most part, you know? But
two or three?
Yeah, what do you have, like 20?
Easy.
The most I have is like 4, I think.
20 spread across 2 different monitors and 4 different virtual sessions, you know?
I'll stick with my KDE right now.
KDE's nice. I prefer KDE, but GNOME is usable.
No matter what you like on Linux, it's still better than running Vista. So
the wow starts now.
You know?
You're starting to hear, for like the last couple of months, you've been hearing, you know, stories that, yeah, even though, you know, they have these, you know, they're making tons of money, Microsoft, from pre-installs,
well, yeah,
you know,
it's
their install base is growing. You hear about, like, you know, the corporate desktop. Nobody wants to freaking touch Vista with a 10-foot pole, man, and with good reason. It's a bloated freaking turd, you know?
Yeah, it won't work on their ass-old computers, and it costs companies a lot of money to upgrade everything so they run on it. And then if they get, you know, if they get everything upgraded so Vista will supposedly run on it, they figure out that it doesn't really do anything anyway. So,
yeah, it's very slow. It's very bloated.
You know, in truth, Vista is the polished turd.
It is. That's a good...
you know? It's nice and shiny. It's got the cool shellac finish going on there, you know, glints in the light.
It's
and when you
Pro.
Get there on it, it's still a turd. So.
Besides being a resource hog, it seems the biggest complaint is that all the third-party apps are all broken now. You know, so somebody I work with, they had a nice, you know, really nice, shiny Sony Vaio laptop, really sweet machine. They had Vista on it, man. What a piece of crap, man. We threw Ubuntu on there, man. Smoking fast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the person was very happy, though. Like, this is awesome. And they're like, this doesn't cost anything? This is amazing. Another convert.
Yep, it doesn't take long. Doesn't take a lot. I mean, I'm, you know, I got 2 or 3 people right now at work that I'm molding into the next generation of Linux converts, you know.
And you hear about...
It's just, you know, it's people that I work with, because I run, you know, of course I run Linux on my, you know, on my desktop computer there, my workstation. And I keep putting digs in, you know, the Windows guy sitting around me, I keep putting digs in every time they have to reboot their computer, and I'll say, you know, I don't have to reboot my computer, you know.
I helped somebody at work with an XP install, man. Horrible, man. I forgot how bad it was. You know, the one thing that really got me was the rebooting was, like, just tiring, man. It took hours.
Reboot.
It's so slow to do that, too.
Dude,
you know?
Man, there was like 20 reboots, man, in like an hour. It was horrible. I don't know how people can say with a straight face that a Linux install is more difficult than a Windows install. What the hell are they smoking?
You know, it hasn't been that. Yeah, it hasn't been that way for a very long time.
I did a 95 last weekend.
Oh, man, that's got to be torture.
It took about 2.5 hours on it. It was just constant reboots. It was like, because, you know, this was for my nephew. He got my parents' old computer on it, so he gave me all the disks because he couldn't figure out what the hell to do, which I don't know why, because it was just put in one disk. It was the Gateway Restore disk. But it was like 2.5 hours of just constant rebooting. I'm sitting there watching TV, and I got it sitting over in the corner.
Exactly. It's like a baseball game. You, like, watch it and ignore it.
It was hilarious because it would be like, I'm installing this program. Now I got to reboot. Installing this program. I got to reboot. I was like, what the fuck?
It's brutal, man. You still see these articles every once in a while where someone will say, well, Linux install is very difficult.
Yeah, well,
maybe if you're retarded, you know.
Baloney. Yeah, it's all baloney now because, you know what? Anybody who has done a recent Linux install knows two things. They know number one that you can install an absolute. They know two things. The first thing they know is if you install Linux, that Linux already has all the drivers that you need. You know, by far.
For the most part, yeah.
That is the case, as opposed to Windows, which you are always having to search for some driver for something, right? So that's number one. That's the first plus and you know, under Linux. And the second plus is you can install soup to nuts Linux and have a fully functional workstation where you can just go off and do your thing in like 20 minutes or less.
Yep. As opposed
and you
to
simply
cannot 2.5 hours
do
plus.
That with Windows. Yeah. Yeah, you cannot do that with Windows. You can't even do that with Windows, you know, in some cases anyway, with, like you said, the gateway restore disks. In some cases, they even take a long time. Now, I've run into computers that have the restore disks for Windows that are very fast.
Well, the restore disk on this one,
you know,
really just set up the drive.
They're few and far between.
And then it was like install, yeah, you know, insert the 95 disk and continue. On it,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, like it was funny because I get the whole thing set up and then, you know, I put a 40 gig drive in this computer years ago. I'm looking at it to make sure that, you know, when I give it back to him, it's going to start up as soon as he plugs it in. I realize it's set mm-hmm. it up to like a 2 gig drive. There's like 38 gigs on this drive.
Empty
he'll
space.
Never know about.
Okay, so that's 38 gig that you could install Linux on it.
Oh, it had Linux on it originally. And he, you know, one problem
time
is
to expand the Linux partition, dude.
Well, one problem is his mother, you know, their internet connection is still stuck on AOL. So
that's brutal.
It's dial up all the way from where they live. So they're still AOL people, and it makes it very difficult for me to push it.
You
a
can
Linux
put
solution.
You
in
can
there.
Give them Linspire, man. I think Linspire has like all those dial up things.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's 13. On it, I'm just like, yeah, do whatever you want with the computer. Just
dude,
don't call me.
I got my 4-year-old using the Linux boxes.
I realize
and
that.
He's totally comfortable with it.
I don't disagree with that. I just don't want to be the one that has to deal with this anymore.
I know what you're saying. You don't want to be tech support.
I have rebuilt.
Dude, I've been there, done that. Trust me.
Yeah, I have rebuilt my sister's computer so many times. I just told her, don't even bother with me anymore. I'm not doing it. I rebuild it, and like 2 weeks later, it's like it's not working again. Yeah. And I take it back, and it'd be all the same shit, like spyware, full of shit. I'm just like,
you got to do what I did. You know, I told everybody that I would not fix their computer anymore unless they were running Linux.
That's what
that's
did,
what,
man.
You know,
that's what you got to do. You got
to
draw the line.
If you're running Windows, don't come looking to me. You
exactly.
can take your computer out to a computer store
somebody.
And have it fixed. They charge you $100 an hour. You know. Have at it.
My response has been, anytime my sister called or anything like that, and it's not being mean, but it's just like, you haven't installed this.
You cold bastard.
Yeah, well, no, I'm... No, I'm up Schitt's Creek already in the family.
I don't know how you sleep at night, Alan.
My mother is pulling that one on me already. Don't worry about that.
Oh, God. Making you feel
guilty.
I thought
you got her a Mac, man.
No. This is not totally... I would love to go into what she's giving me grief on, but I'm not going to do it on the show here.
The show isn't long enough,
It's
huh?
not the computer thing, though.
No, it has nothing to do with computers, but... I'm sure my mother is secretly cursing me as we speak.
You know what, man? My kid's sister, she's not like super technical, but she knows how to use computers. She's familiar with Mac. She's familiar with Windows. She's familiar with Linux to a certain degree because of me. She was considering, like a couple years ago, getting a Mac laptop, and she had a couple of iPods. You know, they've died on her, a couple of them over the last couple of years. And she's actually asking me, Pat, can I get a Linux with... No, a laptop with Linux pre-installed on. I'm like, absolutely, go to Dell. You know, you can do it if you want. And she's actually seriously considering getting a Linux laptop.
Tell us she can save a lot of money. She just orders a laptop she wants and has it shipped to you where you can install Linux and you just...
Well, you can get it pre-installed these days.
I have no problem.
You can, but you always, you know, you always end up having to buy the higher end laptops in order to get it Linux installed. So,
well, you can get
plus then they're like installing with Red Hat. You know,
you can get the Dell machines. They're like the low end was like 7 and change. It's not too bad.
Yeah,
dude, I'm still using my old laptop over here. It works fine, and mine was only 4. You know.
Oh, of course, you can do your own. You know, I'm kind of in the market. Like, I'm starting to look at laptops and stuff, and I'm to the point where I really don't want to buy a laptop where I have to pay for the stupid Windows license. I really don't want to give them the satisfaction of taking my whatever 30, 40, 50 bucks for that stupid Windows registration. Screw them. I don't want them to have my money.
People are talking on the IRC about getting the EPC. And the EPC looks pretty cool, but the problem is the EPC is like $400, right?
Yeah, it's not cheap at all.
Well, yeah. Well, I spent a little over $400 on my Acer laptop that I'm using here, and it's, you know, it's a full-featured, full-fledged laptop. There's no way in hell that I'm going to buy a mini, quote-unquote, laptop for $400, you know.
That's a nice little toy for someone who does basic stuff, you know, browsing the internet, doing email, that kind of thing. You know,
it's a nice little toy for someone who's got a lot of money to blow.
It's overpriced. It you know, when they first announced it, they were talking $200, $300. That is a good price. $400 plus.
$200, I would have bought one in a flat second.
It's overpriced.
$400.
It's overpriced.
Wow, that's way too
much. Are you going for the, what is that, Geos one from Walmart?
Yeah, yeah. But that's a laptop. The EEPC is a laptop with the GOS one. I think it's, what is it, Evermax?
Yeah,
it's those boxes they're selling at Walmart. Now, a lot of people are under the misconception that that machine is Google OS. It's not Google OS at all. It's called GOS, and it just has tighter integration with, you know, the Google apps. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with Google whatsoever, as you know, on a corporate level or anything.
It's not even really tighter integration. All it is that it's a crusty version of a window manager that it's running? Is it like Fluxbox or something like that? It's running Enlightenment, and it's got some icons down on the bottom that point to Google Apps. That's about it. Like, there's nothing integrated with Google Apps at all. Google Apps are all integrated
themselves, and they're
all web apps.
I thought I read, you know who was
involved with
that product?
They don't run on your local machine.
I thought I read on a bulletin board somewhere that Quinn Storm, you know, the person who's associated with the Barrel Project, is working with that GOS. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I heard.
I don't know.
Second, third hand, whatever. So.
I don't know. But I'm trying to tell everybody that the Google apps don't run natively on the laptop. You know, they run
in
your web
browser.
Yeah.
You
know, they run natively over the internet at Google. That's the way Google apps work. So, you know, the whole integration with Google apps, pretty much that's a browser with some links to the Google apps that everybody else has access to already. But even at that, if you look at the computer itself, for $200, you get a really good deal on a Linux computer. And the thing is that you know that if you bring it home and you install any other Linux on it, it's going to work because it already has Linux installed, right? So if you really didn't like the
I was actually
Go
thinking
OS.
About that one for an Asterisk server.
Yeah, if you didn't like the Go OS, it would be a wonderful Linux box. It's perfectly, you know, functionally spec'd out to do that without any problem. Probably could use some more memory. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How big is the hard drive on that thing?
I don't remember.
It was like 80 gig or something
that's
like
decent.
That. But that's fine. You know what I mean? You could.
As long as you're not doing like video editing.
A perfectly respectable system out of that, yeah.
Sadly, it's out of stock.
For like a workstation, you know,
that's
browse
the
internet or whatever, it would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's the second time that's been out of stock. So they're selling them. They're moving them.
Well, yeah, sure. Everybody's jumping on with both hands, man.
In Phillipsburg.
Oh, yeah?
Good price.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's two stores in here, but both of them are out of stock.
I was at the Superstore.
As of 3:19 this morning.
Over in Palmer Township. And yeah. they're selling Dell laptops in Walmarts now.
Yeah.
They sell my laptop in Walmart, too. I saw it in the one over here.
Yeah, they have a couple of HPs, a couple of Compacts. They have the Dell now.
My Acer. Yep. I got an Acer Aspire 3680. And,
I think I have to talk closer to the
Ubuntu,
microphone
so.
Here. Everybody says I drifted off.
I'm going to crank you up, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just talking soft today.
Well, you're on Macs, so.
I'm not on a Mac. I'm talking through the microphone.
No, Macs. I bumped you up all the way. It doesn't go any higher unless you talk louder.
Well, I'll try.
So, don't worry, Alan. If you sound a little low on the stream, you'll sound fine on the recording.
Yeah, Levelator will bring it up.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to sound nice, the outdoor version. Hopefully it doesn't puke on me. It shouldn't. So this week, besides playing around with Dynabolic, I was also playing around a bit with VirtualBox, which is available in the Ubuntu repositories, and I was pretty impressed by it, man. It's quite good, you know. It's actually better than Winferlin. Have any of you guys played with Winferlin at all?
No.
I played around with it a bit maybe a year ago, and it was dog slow. VirtualBox is really nice, man. It installs really
easily. But, how is VirtualBox compared to VMware Server?
Speed-wise, it's pretty good. You can install anything to your heart's content. I don't think it has the widespread adoption that VMware has, where you can go to the VMware website and download all these different OS images that you could just download and fire it up in your either, you know, VMware player or workstation or server. You can't do that, mm-hmm. You got to build your own, as far as I know. But once you have it built, man, it's real good. It's really good. The audio works. USB works. You can set up a shared folder so that you can, have a shared folder sitting on the host and it's accessible through the virtual machine. It's really nice. I was pretty impressed by it. If you haven't checked it out, definitely go check it out. It's quite a good product. And it's free. It doesn't cost anything, and you can download it through your repositories. I think most of the distros have it now, so it's definitely a cool thing.
I use VM at work, so.
Yeah, a lot of people use VM. VMware is great, don't get me wrong. It's fantastic for VMware, but if you use like VMware Workstation, it's what, like $300 if you just buy the full blown version?
No, I don't think it's that much. I forget what we paid for. Nothing over my microphone.
VMware Workstation for a single user license is like $100 or something.
Yeah, it's
come down. Yeah,
it's not that much, but really, you don't even need that. You can just grab VMware Server.
Yeah.
It's free.
Or you can even download VMware Player and just pull down images that are out on their website.
Right.
Create them yourself.
The thing about VMware Player, I don't think it's quite as fast if you're running. Server or workstation. It's not as quick.
I don't know. I used Player at work for quite a long time. I just recently got Workstation there on it. And VM Player is pretty good.
Well, what are you running on it? What kind of virtual machines?
Sadly, I have to run
Windows
on it.
That's fine, you know.
Actually, at work right now, I'm running Windows, and I'm also running Ubuntu on it. Because I'm playing around with database stuff. And
I was playing around with
rather not do it on a production machine.
I was playing around with a whole bunch of different ones. I was playing around with, in VMware, I was doing... some BSD. I installed the Windows image. I pulled down the Green Phone demo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Trolltech phone that they discontinued, I pulled that down. And it's pretty cool, man. There's all these different appliances that you can get. It's just more widespread because it seems, you know, a lot of Windows people use VMware, and a lot of the Mac people too. But it seems with the Mac people, a lot of them are really high on Parallels. That seems to be the latest and greatest for them.
Because Parallels has better integration, desktop integration
with Mac.
With Mac.
Yeah.
Like Parallels does things like, you know, you don't have to run the entire desktop. You can just open up a window, and the window is open on your Mac desktop, and you can cut and paste between the two seamlessly, and you know, that kind of thing. So,
I have Parallels on the laptop here. It actually works very well.
Your Mac laptop?
Yeah.
What does that sell for these days? It was 50 for a while. It's gone up, right?
I got it for that price. I think it's like 89 right now.
So it's not insane.
No, the price is, I have no problem, even though I love free, you know, I love free, of course, on it, but I have no problem
free with a capital F?
Free with any version that you want to put it on it, but I have no problem paying for a program if it works good and it does what I need.
Right.
On it, it's, you know, it's more power to the person who wrote it, for one. That's even with, like, the freeware or the shareware stuff. You know, if it's, you know, $5 or $6 or $10 or whatever, you know, if it works and it does what you want, then you PayPal off that stuff to the person who wrote it, on a sort of, you know, the same way of going.
I don't have a problem paying for a piece of software if it's, like, you know, some independent software writer, even a small company. I don't have a problem with it. If there's a piece of software and there's no free alternatives out there that do what you want to do, and this application does it, it's okay to use it, my book, anyway. I know some people are more hardcore about it. I'm a little more laid back about it. Use whatever works. I just prefer Linux for the most part.
Oh, I have no problem. It's Linux or otherwise. Whatever the system is.
I just don't like
the exception of Windows, because I really just
Your laptop
like that at
there,
all.
Alan, is a nice laptop. I just don't like that keyboard, man. Those chiclet keys, I just don't care for it. Dan's old G4 MacBook had a nice keyboard.
The chiclet keys are the same distance as yours. They just don't have the little angle things.
I don't like that flat top to it.
Oh, no.
I just don't like that. It reminds me of, like, a calculator.
It's nice. You get used to it after a while.
I don't plan on it. I'm looking at laptops, and, like, honestly, I compared the prices with the Macs and some of the other offerings, and the Macs are still more expensive than the Windows boxes. That's the reality, no matter what the Mac people say.
Yeah, but I like it, so I'm not going to worry about that.
Hey, if it works for you, you're happy with it, that's your business.
The deal was, on it, this cost the same as what I was going to pay when I equipped up, you know, a really good laptop.
Well,
and any
what
of the other
were
ones.
You looking at besides that at the time?
I was going back to Sony's, because I've had good luck with those.
Sony's are nice machines. They're definitely high-end.
You know, they're high-end machines, and you pay for that. And I'm like, well, gee, I pay for that or I pay for this. I like this.
I don't know. I've been looking at, like, the laptops, and I've been looking at the ThinkPads are really nice. You know, I'm thinking maybe a ThinkPad. Also, maybe getting one of the Dells just fully loaded to the tilt. And another
I like the T60, but that was way out of my price range.
I'm looking at the T61.
That's newer.
Yeah, it is newer. And the other laptops that I've been looking at is possibly maybe an Asus with no OS on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of companies that are based in the U.S. that import them, and you can get a pretty good deal on something with no OS on it and just install Linux. So I think it's down to those three choices for me, either ThinkPad, a Dell fully loaded, or maybe an Asus machine with nothing on it, just getting, you know, good amount of hardware on it. But I don't have the money right now to get one, but soon, I think. You know, in the next few months, I'll probably get
one. See, no, that's my problem. I spent a little over $400 for the laptop I have now. It works fine, and I'm cheap.
Right.
So,
Well, I'm on the piece of shit laptop right now. It seems to have, like, stabilized a little bit. I'm not having that overheating problem that I had. So, I don't know. He's got it
sitting on top of an ice bucket, but, you know.
No, that's not an ice bucket. It's the wrestling table it's sitting on. But, it was over here. I must have, like, dropped it or something, or my son might have kicked it or something and knocked the fan loose, but it seems to be working a little better now, so it's still alive.
There is
air coming out of the back of that.
Yeah, the fan's working now, so it might have been the fan was just cutting out at the time, and it was overheating the CPU.
Get the vacuum cleaner on it and clean it.
Yeah, I've opened this thing before. It's not much to it. It's not like those Macs with the freaking little pins and things all over the place. And if you take one piece out and you have any left over, you're in trouble.
Well, I do intend not to open this one if at all necessary. Yeah. I opened up enough to put the extra memory into it. And even that's pushing it because I had to like go out and dig up a screwdriver for it because the Phillips heads were just so small.
Yeah, they're really tiny. You get those eyeglass kit screwdrivers?
It was even smaller than that. I mean, it was just like almost impossible to get something to fit in there.
Now, I like the ThinkPads, but it pisses me off that you have to buy a freaking Windows license with them.
Yeah.
I really don't want to do that, you know?
Well, can you try, like, not using it and then sending it back? And, you know, I want my refund.
I sent an email to their salespeople. I'm like, you know, I really like the laptop, but I really don't want to pay for the Windows license. Will you refund me the money for the Windows? They're like, no, absolutely not. Now, they were supposed to offer, I think, a machine with SLED on it. I can't find it on their website whatsoever. They said fourth quarter. This was back, I think it was the Linux World Expo back in August.
In San Francisco, now,
so. It's not much time left in the year, man. We got a freaking month and a half, so if they're going to come out with it, it better be pretty damn soon. You know, I'd be more willing to pay for, you know, a SLED license, even though, you know, they're in bed with Microsoft, than actually get a freaking Windows license, you know, paying for it. But the Nokia NE10, that's coming on any day now.
It's supposed to be out now.
Can you go to the website and order it?
No idea. I haven't looked yet today, but I could have swore I saw a news article today. It says it was out. It says it was.
Yeah, released. I thought it was on like Engadget or something like that. That had just come out. As Pat quickly types away to the Nokia site.
I type pretty quick, man. JZA is asking, what about a System 76? Now, Dan's got a System 76.
Nokia today introduced the Nokia 810 internet tablet. Blah, 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 blah. $479.
So is it out?
I'm trying to get to Nokia's site right now and make sure.
Well, I was saying System 76, they're nice machines. I like Dan's machine. And, you know, they seem to have nice stuff. In general, you're paying probably $200 more for the same machine from somewhere else. So... No, it's your choice. Now, they had a roundup in Linux Journal, like Linux laptops. They didn't even mention System 76 at all, which I thought was kind of lame. They should have at least talked about them, mentioned them. You know, towards the end, they mentioned some of the other vendors that they really didn't cover the machines, and they didn't mention System 76 at all. So, they talked about, was it Penguin Computing? What's that company down in Atlanta that makes they buy the machines and they just load the Linux on them? And they charge maybe, I don't know, $300-$400 more. Is it Penguin Computing?
Penguin, yeah.
Emperor Linux.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Emperor Linux. I mean, those guys have been around a while, and they do good work, but you're going to pay a decent amount of money. See, I'm not rolling in the dough here, man. I got expenses. I got a, you know, family to feed, and, you know. And I don't think I could, you know, that extra $200-$300, man, is a big deal to me.
Extra $200 or $300 to me is another machine, man.
Yeah,
you know?
That extra $200, I can go get a Nokia. Yeah, there's also Linux certified. They have a few machines. There's a few out there. Our Cube was mentioned in the article. I think they're based in Massachusetts, and they basically do the same thing that System 76 does. And you know, so they're a little more expensive. But it's comparable to what they do. They offer a few different distros. I think they offer Fedora. They also Ubuntu. And I think there's another one. I forget which one. Maybe Vanilla Debian. Or even Slackware. I think they might even put Slackware on there for you. So there's options, man. It's definitely gotten better. If you want to buy a Linux-only machine, you can now. So I don't know how it is in other countries. It seems like for once, you know, here in the U.S., it's actually a little ahead of the curve in that respect.
Losing, losing the mouse here. I find the one spot on the table that the mouse doesn't work.
What kind of mouse is that?
A laser one.
Cheapy that you got at the computer show?
No, it's an IBM.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where the hell I got it from, though. But somewhere it says that advertises IBM stuff.
So you're not going to use the Apple mouse, the Mini Mouse?
I have that at home.
Oh, okay.
On it. This is perfectly fine. It's black. It matches the machine.
Oh, you're going for aesthetics then?
Yes.
So, Al, let me ask you, since the Apple store has opened at the Lehigh Valley Mall, how many times have you been there?
Twice.
Did you buy anything, or you just looked?
Looked once, bought a connector.
KVM switch, or?
Yeah.
What'd you pay for that?
It wasn't overly expensive. It was like $50.
But you pay probably more than if you just went to, like, Newegg.
Yeah, but I don't buy shit like that online because I want it instantly.
Oh, you're one of those, huh?
I'm still like a hardcore brick-and-mortar shopper because when I need something, I decide I need it now and not in 3 days shipping.
You're one of those people. You walk into the store and you have to have it now.
Well, no. If I'm there and I need it, I go, gee, I need this. I just buy it now.
You don't mind spending a little more for it?
No, I mean, that's something I need.
You see, I'm a cheap bastard. I'm not so much a cheap bastard.
It was the same price if I went to Circuit City and bought this.
I don't want to overpay for something. That's how I am. If I can go to a website and get the same freaking thing for less, I will. You know.
Actually, wasn't it?
Dude, didn't you just spend like $200 on a remote?
No, I spent $125 for it.
How can you say you're a cheap bastard, but you spent $130 on a remote?
That remote goes for $200 plus.
That's crazy, dude. It's a remote.
You can get the same remote on eBay used.
Does it give you a hand job at the same time or something like that, you know?
You know what, man?
But it lights up blue.
You get those universal remotes, like if you buy, like, you know, a DVD player or an AV receiver, they give you those remotes. But those, they're supposed to be universal where you can, you know, control your TV and stuff. Yeah, you can turn it on and turn it off, but the functionality is pretty basic for the most part. This thing controls everything, man.
Actually, it wasn't a KVM that I bought. It was the DVA. It was the mini DV to a TV connector.
Converter plug.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's an awesome remote control, man. The Harmony, man, it rules. If you have like a system, an AV system, where you have a lot of components, it's the way to go, man. It controls everything, and you can, you know, the software, they give you a CD, but it's only Windows and Mac software. There's a project. The guy I wrote about it in my blog. There's a guy who pretty much you could use like the web interface. And he wrote a little app to copy the file, you know, to the remote in Linux, so you don't have to use it in Windows at all. So it's fully compatible, man. Once again, the community steps up and somebody gets the job done. You know, if the manufacturer doesn't want to freaking do it, you know, the community does it. It would be nice if they gave some specs or some documentation, so you don't have to freaking reverse engineer the whole thing from the bottom up. You know, there's plenty of people out there who are willing to freaking write drivers and code apps. For nothing, you know, and they're pretty damn good at it, you know.
Well, they code apps because they like it, which is, you know, better than because they're paying you. If you have some, you know, personal pride at stake after doing that, so.
It's a matter of pride is what it boils down to. You code an app, you know, it's their baby. They want to do it right, man. They put the extra effort into it. You know, sometimes it grows into other things, you know. Like, for instance, you know, our doors is getting a lot of press, man. The guy that does it, Paul Davis, who, you know, we interviewed back in May, he that's his living. He works on our door 24 hours, man. It's, you know, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it if you really want, you know, do it. You can. It's possible. JZA is asking, am I going to buy one laptop per child? Probably not. I really don't have the money. I can give my kid my old laptop. I want a new one.
Oh, come on, you want to go to work with a green laptop, dude?
They're actually really nice little machines. They had it at the Ohio Linux Fest.
Yeah, I was going to say, we played with them there.
It's pretty damn cool, man. It's a nice little machine. So they have that program now.
It's bad shopping time for me, so I would love to buy one, but it's just this time of year is just shitty in terms of money for me.
They have the program now where if you buy two and one goes to a child,
I have to still pay off
in
my
a developing nation, you get one take home for your kid or whatever, or to give to somebody. So it's like $400, I think, and you basically
think that goes on to the 26th of this month.
Yeah, it's a limited time, so you're basically purchasing two, you keep one, and the other one goes to some kid somewhere. So it's a good deal, you know. It's a good program. You know, my laptop's still working. If I get a new machine, I'll let my kid use my old laptop. It's still functioning, and you can get online until it completely dies. You know,
you can get online and show Dad where to find all the porn.
No, that's not nice, man. I'm not
Daddy.
Dan.
Daddy, look what I found.
Dan's a creepy one, not me, man.
Look what I found, Daddy.
The day comes when every kid breaks into their dad's porn collection at some point.
Not mine, because I don't have any.
You don't have any kids.
So mine is safe.
The way you said it, it sounded like you didn't have a porn collection.
Of course I do.
There you go.
Who doesn't? Everyone has one at one time or another in their life.
So, Alan, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Adding to my porn collection. No. No, the mother-in-law is coming over.
The mother-in-law.
Yes, you can tell how happily I say
Dan.
That.
It's our mother-in-law.
Which means I'm going to, like, disappear as much as possible.
I'm going to my mom's.
Well, you know what? If you really want to disappear, Alan, you should truck on down to my house and visit, you know? That'll disappear
that.
You for a good few hours.
I've got, like, cigars to smoke, man. I've got to come down.
There you go, man. Bring them on.
Was it, like, an hour and a half drive?
It's probably. It depends on how you drive. About an hour and a half, yeah.
Bit of a hike.
Well, I meant to come down over the summer because I was down at a King of Prussia Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And driving back, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, this is right around where Link is.
How far are you from King of Prussia?
Yeah, King of Prussia is like 20, 25 minutes
it's
away.
Close. Yeah. Well, that was
depending
the day we were
traffic,
on the motorcycle, and Carolyn was like, I don't know what the hell she was going, what was going on through her head, but we got all the way down to King of Prussia, and she's like, from being outside all day and everything, she was like dehydrated. So we get off the bike, and she's like waving.
Oh, wobbly!
I was like, just sit down here in the corner for a little bit. And, you know, it was like one of those nice hot days, and you know, it didn't bother me at all. But you know, she got off the bike, and it was just like you know, falling over.
So, Alan, on Black Friday, are you going to stand out there at 5 o'clock in the morning?
I have had to work on Black Fridays.
Does
I will never go out. I think she did last year, but I don't think she's doing anything this year.
That's psychotic. The only thing I would maybe buy is an HD DVD player. That's about it. If Walmart has those $100 HD DVD players, I might go get one. I hate that whole thing, man. The last couple of years, I posted pictures from different websites that people put up. You know,
yeah.
There's brawls that break out and people are stomping on each other. It's insane, man.
Oh, I think it gets blown out of proportion a lot. I mean, I can remember, you know, the insanity of, like, when you, what was this, Cabbage Patch dolls. Because I was working in a grocery store.
You got to tell the story.
I was working at, it was Lenco. It was a half food, half grocery store, one of those type places. And, I mean, that was, like, the first you ever heard of people, like, lining up, you know, 2 hours before the store opened to get these things. And it was hilarious because we had a whole bunch of them on there. And the night before, they had waxed all the floors. It was absolutely fabulous. I was watching these people. They opened up the door.
You're ice skating.
These people
like
came running in and
rink,
had to make
man.
A hard left to get to the toys department. And you watch these like old fat people like just rolling like bowling balls off the thing. It was great. I have never had so much fun at work than I had that day.
I can see. I have that image of Alan standing behind the door. Looking for the window, laughing.
I was like at the other end of the hallway, but it was like you know because everybody was like, "My God, there's like tons of people standing outside for these things." And you know, the manager goes over and opens up all the doors at once,
on it. And these people just came running through
the door.
Oh, they just came running through the doors, hit the corner, and just went out. It was great.
Oh, man. It's too funny. Yeah, people are insane, man.
That was for a stupid doll. That wasn't even like Black Friday.
Yeah, that was the first like mania.
Oh yeah, that was it was totally asinine. All those things are like in dumps now.
The only thing that I'm thinking about getting this year, you know, when everything goes on sale cheap, is I really would like to get a different camcorder. I have one that's VHS-C right now. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it's all bad.
You gotta go to
I'm thinking
DVD.
About getting one of
DV.
Well, I want to get one of the ones that record onto the DVD itself.
Yeah, or solid state.
But I think that you have problems with, like, if you want to do editing with those. So I have a guy at work who has one, and he can't see. You know,
you gotta rip it
on
right?
the. Well, yeah, you've got to rip the DVD in order to do anything on it. Whereas, like, if you get the tape, you, and plus you get a little more time on the tape too. I think he only
get
gets
about
like
an hour.
I think he only
gets
like 15
gets
or is it that much? Because I think he was saying he was only getting like 15 or 20 minutes on one.
Well, what about the camera that you got?
Oh, that sucks.
That one's pretty good, man.
Which one? The little tiny thing I got?
Yeah.
Or
The one that's solid state that records.
Oh yeah, that's a nice camera. You know, if you're gonna do anything for any length of time though, you probably want to go with like a regular, you know, mini DV one or something like that.
Well, that's where it's going. Like some of the high definition.
The problem with that little one I have on it is it weighs nothing on it. So if you're trying to hold it up in front of your face for
it.
A while, well, yeah, my hands shake too much, and that's, you know, that's why I never put the video up from the. From the Ohio Linux Fest when we did the drawing on, is because my hands were shaking so much you
like
can't
an earthquake.
See. Yeah, it's like an earthquake. Because the camera weighs like 2 ounces. So you hold your hand up in front of your face for a while with nothing there, but yet you're trying to like look
through it.
You
should get a tripod, man.
Well, yeah, it has a tripod on it, but I didn't bring one to the Ohio thing. But you need something with a little bit of weight.
Yeah. Well, video cameras, you know, camcorders and stuff, they're going solid state. Like some of the HD ones, they're going in that direction. And it's a good thing. That means you wouldn't have to actually, you know, with the mini DV camera, like the one I have, my Canon, you got to plug it in with the FireWire and you have to actually play the tape. So if you have like an hour of footage, you got to let it run for an hour. With these solid state cameras, it's just dragging and dropping files. That's where it's going. And that'll be, you know, much quicker and faster and a better way to do it, you know. The thing is, though, they haven't like, you know, they haven't decided on one particular format, you know. You know, it's all about formats and competitors and stuff, you know. You know, it's like the whole thing with the DVDs, you know, the Blu-ray versus HD DVD. You know, until one format comes ahead of the other ones, it's, you know, you could buy something that's going to be, you know, dead in, you know, 2-3 years.
Yeah.
So
that's why you go with the DV one.
Well, the standard definition mini DV ones are pretty standard. You know, they work pretty well. If you have a FireWire card, it's really easy to get the footage off of there.
Yes.
Use DV Grab or Kino or KDN Live, and they'll pull the footage right off of there.
iMovie.
No comment.
Wake up, Link.
No, I don't want to. I want to wake up.
You got a song for us there?
Yeah, I'm firing up the little player here. I'm going to get everything all lined up.
Do you beat Metallica?
Yes, I'm going to play a Metallica song.
Yeah. Haven't heard those in a while.
You get to play like their Enter Sandman version? That's pretty cool.
I don't know what he's playing. What are you playing? Once he holds the MP3 player in the right position to be able to read it.
Garage Days Nights. I can't see it.
You'll hear it. So
you'll hear it. It's not a work safe song. You know, there's cursing in it because they're goofing on James Hetfield cursing all the time.
Who cares?
Which he does. So, you guys have anything else to add tonight?
That's it. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
To those who celebrate it, and even to those who don't.
Yeah, if you don't, you know, celebrate it in your country where you're listening, you know, celebrate it anyway.
If you don't, go out and get a turkey sandwich and think of us.
Well, Canadians have Thanksgiving,
sandwich.
But it's in October.
Get a turkey sandwich.
Next week we're talking to Michael Shulo from the Open Moco Project, so that should be an interesting interview. We got some good ones coming up. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. If you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, that's your loss. We'll see you next week. You guys have anything else, Dan?
That's it.
Hey.
Alan.
Works for me, man. Have a good one, everybody.
All righty. We're going to say goodnight. We're going to play it out. This is Metallica.
Good night.
Not work safe.
But you don't really care.
Keel over and die. Michael, we don't have a lot of time on this earth. We weren't meant to spend it this way. Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
Studies have statistically shown that there's less chance of an incident if you do it at the end of the week.
What would you say you do here?
Well, look, I already told you. I deal with the goddamn customers so the engineers don't have to. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What the hell is wrong with you people?